Philadelphia Eagles and Kansas City Chiefs are off to the Super Bowl. Everyone else, Tennessee Titans included, are off to the Senior Bowl. It's the off season is ramping up for those teams who are not playing for championships. But some familiar names for Titans fans will be taking part in that Super Bowl. We will be talking about that and more on this episode of the Believe in Titans podcast. With our usual lineup, I am David Beauclair, joined as always by former Titans cornerback Denard Walker. Denard, welcome in.
Thanks for having me, and congratulations to the Kelsey brothers, and as well as you, David, your hometown, going to the Super Bowl.
Yes, I've got a lot of people very, very excited about that. And that Kelsey brothers storyline is going to be a big one. Yeah. And of course, John Glennon. John, welcome in.
Thank you. Much appreciated.
And before we get going, let me remind everyone that the Believe in Titans podcast is brought to you by Bet Online. Bet Online remains your number one source for all your sports betting this season. Everything from the NFL playoffs to pro and college basketball, UFC, MMA, and more. You'll always find the latest odds, team matchup info, player news, and game trends at Bet Online. With live betting options, free contests, and live scores for almost any sport or game imaginable. BetOnline is truly the fastest and easiest way to bet all your favorite leagues and events. Head to the website today or use your mobile device to join and receive your 50% welcome bonus with your first deposit. Make sure to use the promo code BELIEVE, that's B-L-E-A-V, to receive your rewards. BetOnline.ag, where the game starts. The football world will be talking for the next 2 weeks about the Super Bowl matchup. For Tennessee Titans fans, it's probably a little bit bittersweet in terms of both teams involved. The Titans played one of their better games of the season against the Kansas City Chiefs. Came out of that game, even though it was a loss, looking like a real contender in the AFC. They went toe to toe with the Chiefs for 58 plus minutes. Without Ryan Tannehill at quarterback, but couldn't win that game. And of course, on the other side, you have former Titans AJ Brown and Brett Kern with the Philadelphia Eagles. John, I'll start with you. Should Titans fans be rooting for the Eagles because of the connections their history with AJ and Brett Kern, or how do you think that's going to go?
Yeah, that's going to be a tough call there. If I had to guess, I'm thinking the average Titans fan is not real happy to see A.J. Brown playing for a Super Bowl ring right now. A.J. Brown was a great guy when he was here with the Titans. I think he was very well liked, obviously an excellent player. But, you know, we've gone over many times in this podcast that the number of times he's kind of tried to reach back and tweak the Titans ever since that deal was made, and seemingly taking shots that are unnecessary for a guy who had just landed a big contract, was playing with a quarterback who was a close friend of his, and was pretty well set up with a good team. But I think, when they played earlier this season, when A.J. Brown had the great game against the Titans, and he, of course, we remember what he did with the goalpost, after one of his touchdowns, kind of beat it with the towel and said, that's for, I got to beat you for what you did. But then, I got to hug you and love you, after that. I think A.J. Brown, to me, in that game sort of seemed to get all that anti-Titan sentiment maybe finally out of his system. We really haven't heard any chirps or any social media commentary towards the Titans since then. I think he exhausted that right then. So now, in my opinion, I think if you're a Titans fan, I think you're less troubled by A.J. Brown, the person, and what he has done, and more troubled by the fact that he, every time you're going to watch him in the Super Bowl, you're thinking, how come we didn't find a way to keep this guy here? So I think that's kind of where it stands now. And then you look at Brett Kern. Sure, you have to be happy for Brett Kern. Great, great player for the Titans for so many years, handled everything in a class act, despite getting kind of moved out of the way for an undrafted free agent. So I think there's some happiness there, but certainly a lot of frustration every time they're going to watch A.J. Brown make a big play in this Super Bowl.
Denard, I'll ask you, Brett Kern, you know, a guy in his 15th season, a guy who spent most of the regular season out of the league on the sidelines, kind of watching, waiting. How rewarding do you think this moment is for him to feel like he made the right choice if he was going to come back, that this was what he came back for, right?
Yeah, because if you look at his career, I mean, he's one of the most productive punters in Titans history, if not the most productive. He owns, tons of franchise records, most punt yards, 43,623, most punt yards in a season, over 4,000, most punt yards in a game, 2017 against Miami was 549 yards. That's crazy. And then you come back and you culminate a Super Bowl into your career. I mean, how many guys do you know have capped off their careers by going to a Super Bowl? I mean, he's done everything possible in this league to be not only one of the greatest of all time, but I think he has a resume that you might need to consider him for Hall of Fame, because I do think he's been that productive. But imagine you cap off your career with a Super Bowl win. How often do we see that, David?
Yeah, not often, and it's interesting because these were two of the more dramatic roster decisions the Titans made this offseason, right? The draft day trade of A.J. Brown that seemingly came out of nowhere so that the Titans could move up and select Treylon Burks there. And then, you know, as training camp in the preseason played out, we all started to understand exactly what Ryan Stonehouse was doing and was capable of doing. It certainly seemed unthinkable at the start of the offseason that Brett Kern wouldn't have a job with the Titans. But, you know, the Brett Kern decision worked out well for everybody involved, right? I mean, Ryan Stonehouse breaks an 80-year-old NFL record. He's a Pro Bowl alternate, a second-team All-Pro, and so on. You know, the Brett Kern gets this opportunity late in the year and now ends up in the Super Bowl. The A.J. Brown thing didn't work out well for the Titans, certainly in the short term. You know, Treylon Burks can make that deal look better over the next 4 years or so, and we'll see how that plays out. But I think, you know, you already saw some of it on social media today. Fans, you know, just lamenting the fact that A.J. Brown is, you know, things have worked out so well for him here. And Donato, I want to ask you that, you know, Philadelphia has a lot of weapons on that offense. I mean, there, you know, Jalen Hurts is a good player. Devontae Smith is a good player. Miles Sanders was the fifth leading rusher in the league. They've got a great offensive line. Dallas Goedert's one of the best young tight ends in the league. But how important has A.J. Brown been to that team's success this year, do you think?
That's the reason that they're playing in a Super Bowl, David. That's why they went out this offseason and they paid him a 4-year deal, $100 million. $57 million of that is guaranteed. And look at his numbers. I mean, he has shined this year. He's the top receiver in the league right now. He went to Philly. He's playing alongside with his buddy Jalen Hurts. Again, arguably to me, should be the MVP this year. He didn't just make – and let me say this. He made Jalen Hurts better. He made that offense better this year. You look at his production, over 1,000 yards receiving again. I mean, he's just an elite receiver. We saw the game against Tennessee. He absolutely dismantled his secondary. And what he was doing when he whipped the goalpost, he was spanking it, just letting them know that's exactly what happened. He spanked that secondary. But again, when you – Mike Vrabel, and I read an article the other day, David, and it says that Mike Vrabel contributed a decrease of 60 receptions and 860 yards among Titans receivers through 13 weeks. Look at that. What do you see? That's production lost from one player. And now you look at Philly and you wonder why they're in the Super Bowl this year.
Yeah, it's I've read a couple things coming out of the conference championship games too, where people are saying AJ Brown was the single best move that the Eagles made this year, and they've made a bunch of notable ones when you talk about adding a Bradberry to their secondary and picking up an Ndamukong Suh and Linval Joseph mid-season and so on, but you know AJ Brown and John, we saw this with the Titans. I mean, you knew that this guy wasn't going to be easily replaced, but Titans just never came close to making up for the production they lost with him, did they?
No, they didn't, and I think certainly, they expected more and wanted more out of Treylon Burks, and he got off to a bad start, in the off season. He was out of shape, he had asthma, so that never panned out. Again, as you mentioned, David, it's certainly possible in future years that Treylon Burks, winds up being one of the better receivers in the league, but we don't know that for sure right now. What I think we have to look at too, in the NFC Championship game is not only did we see AJ Brown, but we also saw on the other side of the ball Debo Samuel for the 49ers. And you have to go back and compare their situations again. Debo Samuel was even more adamant about wanting the 49ers to trade him. He was, of course, in a similar contract situation that AJ Brown was with the Titans. They sort of paralleled one another, except Debo Samuel was very much, he was vocal about saying, "Hey, I want out. I'm done with the 49ers. I'm moving on." And the 49ers just let him have him say, let him speak what he wanted to say, but they didn't give up on him. They didn't give up on a deal. And eventually, obviously, they re-signed him, and he did great things and brought them back to the NFC Championship game. Whereas the Titans took the opposite course. I think they'd had enough of AJ Brown, kind of being impatient and wanting his money as quickly as possible. And they chose the opposite course. They said, "Okay, AJ Brown, you're not happy here. All right, we are going to move you then." What might have sounded good at the time to John Robinson certainly didn't prove good for the Titans or John Robinson in the long run.
And yeah, it cost him his job. I mean, to what degree, I guess we can't say for certain. Only Amy Adams Strunk knows that, but I don't think there's any doubt that the way that move played out over the course of the season, and particularly that day in Philadelphia, had a big impact on the fact that John Robinson is looking for another job at this point. We mentioned the Titans played both of these teams this season, wildly different. I mean, they lost both, but wildly different games in terms of how they played out. Denard, does anything about either of those games tell you something about which team is more likely to win this Super Bowl?
No, again, it's a different season. It's postseason, so you can't look at what happened in the regular season. Because if we look the way that Tennessee played Philadelphia, that game was over in the first quarter. But if you look at the game against Kansas City, Tennessee had a chance to win up to about 3 minutes left in the game. So yeah, you're probably saying, "Well, I'll give the edge to Philly." That's not how you do it in this league. What was alarming to me when I went back and read some of my notes is the fact that how good this defense is and how well they played this year. You think about when they went into Kansas City, they absolutely beat up Patrick Mahomes. Let's not talk about the 446 yards passing, but the fact that they would recorded 8 quarterback hits, they sacked them 4 times, and they held KC, which one of the top third down offenses, to what, 42% on third down conversions. They absolutely play well. Again, the problem with this team, and I don't want to continue to go into it, if they address the perimeter, then next year we can see Tennessee in this situation possibly.
The fact that there is 2 weeks between the conference championships and the Super Bowl gives coaches an opportunity to do some job interviews and things. Certainly, Eric Bieniemy has been a guy who's interviewed for a number of head coaching jobs. Bieniemy, of course, being the Kansas City offensive coordinator. Titans reportedly interested in talking to him, though, about being their offensive coordinator. Same thing for senior offensive assistant Matt Nagy of the Chiefs. John, I'll ask you this. Do you think the fact that the Kansas City's in the Super Bowl helps either of these guys' case with the Titans? Does the fact that you're going to have to wait another couple weeks hurt? What do you make of the timing now of all this?
Yeah, I think I'm not positive of this, but I think if I was reading the rules correctly, I think if you had a first interview with playoff coaches before their divisional round game, then you can have a second interview with them during the bye week of the Super Bowl. I believe that is the way it works. I'm not absolutely sure on that, and we don't know for sure whether the Titans have had a first interview with Nagy or Bieniemy. We just know that they're interested, but certainly it can't hurt their cause. The fact that Kansas City is in the Super Bowl, the fact that Kansas City is playing well. Amy Adams Strunk has been on record as saying she's willing to wait for coaches if that's what it takes. But at the same time, I think, you know, it still adds to that question mark when you deal with anyone but Andy Reid on the offensive side of the ball from Kansas City. And that question is, how much of the success of Kansas City's offense is either Matt Nagy or Eric Bieniemy versus how much of it is coming straight from Andy Reid? And also, oh, by the way, having a quarterback named Pat Mahomes as well. So I don't know. You kind of have to look into the full background, I think, of both of those guys. And you know, I think we have talked about this a little bit earlier before. I think, Denard, you pointed it out too. But, you know, Matt Nagy also, you know, was very effective with Alex Smith when he was in Kansas City, you know, when he was quarterback's coach and I think offensive coordinator for a little bit as well. And there have certainly been plenty of comparisons drawn between Alex Smith and Ryan Tannehill. So that might be something that would work in Matt Nagy's favor if he was the guy who wound up here. Eric Bieniemy, yeah, again, you want to say, okay, the resume that, you know, here's the offensive coordinator of an offense has gone crazy, you know, over the past few years, and you just keep finding yourself going back to that one question of how much of it is Eric Bieniemy, you know, assuming he is not the original play caller. I think the assumption sort of is that Andy Reid calls plays, they go through Bieniemy, they go to Pat Mahomes at that point. So you're still kind of left wondering, you know, how much of Bieniemy's work would transfer over, you know, to a different team. To me, that's the one question, you know, about two guys with some very good resumes.
Yeah, it's an interesting point because Bieniemy has interviewed with, I think the number is half the NFL teams over the last few years for head coaching positions. He's interviewed with the Colts for their head coaching job this year and whatnot. And, you know, Denard, do you think if he doesn't get hired as a head coach again this time, would it benefit him, do you think, to get out from under Andy Reid's shadow and maybe come to a team like the Titans and where, you know, they obviously need to do something on offense to revive this thing and get it going again? Would that maybe be the kind of thing that would get him a head coaching opportunity?
Yes, because everybody knows that Andy Reid is calling the plays at Kansas. Yeah, you know what? First, I want to say this about Matt Nagy. And let us not forget, in 2018, he was working with a young quarterback by the name of Mitchell Trubisky that they drafted high. And then he went on in 2018, they went to the playoffs, and he was the first Bears quarterback since Jim McMahon in 1986 to be named to the Pro Bowl. So again, I give the adage there to Nagy. That's how good he is. And then you have a young quarterback in Tennessee by the name of Malik Willis. So you have to think about that, not to mention he worked with Alex Smith when he had that phenomenal year in 2017 where he put up career highs. But on your point with Eric Bieniemy, should he get out of Kansas City to prove to people that he is an effective play caller? Can I give you a quick example of that? So when I was in Denver, you know, I love Gary Kubiak. I think the world of Gary Cube, I call him. He is a great offensive-minded coach. But he was the offensive coordinator for the Broncos for a long time. And when I was there, he had the role of offensive coordinator. Now, unfortunately, by the way, Mike Shanahan, he's the head coach, he was the one calling the plays half of the time. So what happens is when Cube left to go to, I think, to Houston, again, that's where his career took off. And that's what you sometimes need as a coach, it, to kind of create your own identity. I don't think Eric Bieniemy is going to get a head coaching job until the league sees that he's got under, he's no longer under that, what I call that Andy Reid tree of coaching, because we know what Andy Reid, what he's about. Look at the coach that we're talking about, Matt Nagy. He's probably the hottest offensive mind coach right now that we've been considering. And who did he, how did he break into the league? Andy Reid. So again, yeah, I think it would benefit if Eric Bieniemy wants a head coaching job, then he needs to go somewhere else and be the offensive coordinator and prove to people that he can call plays without Andy Reid on his side.
While we're talking about quarterbacks, it was interesting. Rand Carthen, the new Titans GM, of course, was on a podcast last week with hosted by former NFL player Chris Long, and the subject of quarterbacks and what Carthen likes in quarterbacks came up. And Denard, I'm going to ask you this. Rand Carthen said he liked anticipatory and accurate passers. He likes guys who know where the hole in the defense is going to be, is willing to throw to a spot, and can get the ball there on target. And I ask you, does that sound like somebody who is currently on the Tennessee Titans roster?
Ryan Tannehill?
Yes, it does.
Who else?
Yeah. So John Glennon, is that bad news for Malik Willis in terms of what his role might be for 2023?
It certainly could be. I mean, certainly the worst news, was the fact that the Titans went out and picked up Josh Dobbs and had him starting in about a week and a half over Malik Willis. That was the big red flag right there. But, you know, are those traits that you mentioned, do we see those in Malik Willis now? No, you know, he's not an anticipatory thrower. In fact, he's sort of the reverse. You know, the big knock on him right now is that, you know, he processes things a little bit slowly, and as a result, the ball comes out a little bit later, and that can lead to interceptions, and bad things generally happen in that regard. And it probably doesn't hurt, or probably doesn't help Malik Willis's case either, that Rand Carthen is coming from an organization where a rookie quarterback, Brock Purdy, rattled off 7 straight wins, I think it was, during the regular season and playoffs, and you know, would have had a decent chance of leading his team into the Super Bowl had he not been injured very early against Philadelphia. So, you know, to me, I you know, just those comments that he made on the podcast and the traits that he liked, you know, doesn't necessarily paint a great future for Malik Willis. The whole question with Malik Willis is how long are you willing to wait? You know, I mean, because obviously there are skills and talent there. But can you go through, another season where he is a number two that might not be ready immediately for a number one? I mean, are you ready to do that again? Do you feel like you have to get somebody, you know, that's more ready to jump in the game right away at that point?
Yeah, there's no question when it comes to the idea of anticipatory and accuracy and whatnot that's Ryan Tannehill right now and not Malik Willis. The question is, do the Titans think Malik Willis can get to be that guy? And Denard, maybe I'll ask you this: how can you judge that? Do you think, or does he just have to at some point convince himself, I just got to start cutting this ball loose and trust my coaching and believe that it's going to happen the way they say it's going to happen if I do this?
Well, we got to remember it's his first year. He's just a rookie. So again, he's still learning. I can bring up plenty of players that went on to have great careers, but they struggle as rookies. Peyton Manning, he struggled as a rookie. The great Dan Fouts, he struggled as a rookie. John Elway struggled as a rookie. But I want to give – I got a question for both David and John, because I know y'all are kind of in the front office and you get a chance to talk to a lot of people. But this is what I got an interesting question is – Rand Carthon is coming from San Francisco. Now, the last time I checked, San Francisco, they have 3 quarterbacks in the quarterback room. Trey Lance, your first rounder a few years ago, Jimmy Garoppolo, and now Brock Purdy has kind of won the fans over. So, again, could we see possibly a trade where Trey Lance or Jimmy G comes to Tennessee, if you're not sold on Malik and you know that you're going to have a 35-year-old Ryan Tannehill in 2023.
Jimmy Garoppolo is going to be a free agent this year.
Well, there you go.
And, you know, if you think back to when John Robinson started as GM for the Titans. Now, granted, he was 2 years removed from his time with the Patriots, but he was clearly still kind of relying on things he had done and people he knew there with the Patriots. When you look at some of his earliest big acquisitions, you're talking about Logan Ryan, you're talking about Deion Lewis, you're talking about Josh Klein, guys who all played big roles for the Titans right off the bat. You know, he clearly wanted guys he was comfortable with. I would assume Rand Carthen is going to be feeling the same way as a first-time GM and wanting to go with guys he knows. Now, Jimmy Garoppolo has a terrible injury history, particularly, you know, coming off a broken foot this year, you know, worse than Ryan Tannehill's injury history. But if you need to make some salary cap moves and you decide Tannehill's out, maybe you get Garoppolo cheaper and you're comfortable with him. I think that's a real possibility. And John, I know you saw this. I think you and I have talked about this. Trey Lance, when Carthen got the job, put out a tweet that sort of suggested if he's not going to be San Francisco's starting quarterback, he would like to stick with Rand Carthen. Yes.
A little bit, yeah. I think there were some various interpretations of that tweet. Some people thought it was just kind of a Trey Lance, you know, liked Rand Carthen and said, hey, good luck, in Tennessee kind of tweet. Others interpreted it as saying, hey, don't forget about me, you know, when you're in Tennessee. Maybe bring me along as well. A couple of things might work against a Trey Lance trade. One, let's remember how much the 49ers invested into Lance, you know, when they traded up to make that pick in the first place. Are they willing to move him now when you're not going to get the kind of anywhere near the kind of return that you gave up for Trey Lance in moving up, because he really hasn't had a chance to show too much. And then the other thing too, we have to keep in mind is obviously Brock Purdy, that torn, ulnar collateral ligament, I believe it was, in the game against Philadelphia in the NFC Championship. Well, that takes apparently 6 months to repair, which basically takes him out of the entire offseason as well. So are you, you know, it'd be one thing maybe if you were a little more certain about Brock Purdy being either a one or a two moving ahead for San Francisco. You know, maybe you're a little bit more likely to give up on a guy like Lance. But if Purdy is hurt now for 6 months, yeah, and you're a little unsure of what his future is, you know, maybe that makes you all the more willing, all the more likely, as I say, to hang on to Trey Lance.
So, Denard, Jimmy Garoppolo, do you like him? Is he still a good, viable quarterback in the NFL, you think?
Yes, he definitely can play if he cuts, you know, the turnovers, if he can cut that out of his game, because we know that if he throws two or more interceptions, they're least likely to win. But again, I just looked at that room and I said, man, somebody, that's a crowded room. And to watch Trey Lance and watch how he evolved this year and how he won that fan base, I mean, how can you not go into the beginning of training camp with possibly Brock Purdy being your starting quarterback? Are you sold on Trey Lance and he's going into what, his third year? Is that a move that, again, Rand Carthen would be willing to make? I mean, I know you give up a lot of draft picks, but, you know, Tennessee, you got to address the quarterback position because you got a 35-year-old quarterback next year. It'll be in 2023, it'll be 35. So it's just to me, it's just a question.
It's an interesting point too, because the NFL has set the salary cap for the coming season at $224.8 million. The Titans are roughly $23 million over that number. There are certainly ways to get there, but you know, John, as Rand Carthen takes on this job now, compared to John Robinson, he's got a much better roster, a settled coaching situation, but not the kind of draft capital that John Robinson had in 2016, and does have some salary cap issues to deal with here. So, you know, is he in a position to maybe make a move where he deals some draft picks, or is he going to have to really value those picks given the other factors he's dealing with this offseason?
Yeah, it's an interesting situation comparing how Rand Carthen and John Robinson both came and took over, you know, and the more I look at it, you know, the more I if it was me, I might like to have been in John Robinson's position, despite the fact that I think Rand Carthen has more talent, you know, clearly has more talent on the roster now. But when you look at John, when John Robinson came in, the bar was so low. The Titans were so bad for so many years. They had a 5 wins combined in the last 2 years. They had the number one pick. You know, you can't ask for much more draft capital than the number one pick. You know, John Robinson had, you know, basically he could mold the entire franchise, you know, because it was at such a low point. And you know, whatever deals he made were likely, you know, given the capital that he had, were likely going to improve that team. On the other hand, now we got Rand Carthen. You got some challenges here. Yeah, you've only got, you know, 6 draft picks. David, you mentioned he's $24 million over the cap, and you're going to have to make some big decisions with some of these veterans, you know, whether you want to cut these guys or not. So it's not an easy job that Rand Carthen walks into, despite the fact that the Titans have won in 6 of the past 7 seasons. And one of the first things I think we'll find out about Rand Carthen versus John Robinson, is he a big home run swing kind of guy? We know that John Robinson does or did that kind of thing. You know, he was taking big cuts pretty much from the moment he stepped into that office. It'll be interesting to see whether Rand Carthen jumps in and says, hey, I want to make some moves. I want to get another quarterback in here. I want a wheel deal. Or whether he tends to be more of the kind of the more traditional general manager, you know, play things a little safer, build through the draft.
Denard, if you're Rand Carthen, then what you look at this Titans roster, what's your approach to that? Do you value those draft picks that you have this year, or do you try and move some things around and figure if I just get one or two particular pieces in the draft, the rest of it's gravy?
You build through the draft, David. You know, that's how you make it in this league. It's about your draft picks. And then not to mention, how will he address free agency? You know, what are you going to do? What splash are you going to make? Are you going to go out there and pull a Philly in Tennessee this year? Are you going to bring a big time free agent in? There's a lot of holes, especially when you look at this offensive unit. Your offensive line is decimated by injuries, inconsistency at the tackle position, in particular the left tackle. So there's so many holes that he's got to address. Not to mention you have a quarterback he has 1 year left on his contract. So I was kind of reading his contract situation, and if you cut him this year, what is it? He was going to make like $24 million. And if you cut him, you end up in return, you don't lose much. What you do is you gain a lot, because the way that it works is they're void those 2 years of his contract. So he gets like $9 million. So, I mean, there's a lot of, I don't know. I wouldn't want to be a general manager because I wouldn't want to make this move, David, but I mean, he's got a lot of work to do. And what are you going to do? I mean, I just want to see how they're going to address free agency, because if you look at Cincinnati, that's what they did. Look at their offensive linemen. Their offensive line pretty much is made up of free agents. And that's how you win in this league today.
Yeah, I think the good news for the Titans and their fans is that Rand Carthen comes from a San Francisco team that is similar to the Titans, in that you talk about, you know, they put a high premium on physicality and on being able to run the football and in having having an active and aggressive defensive front and those sorts of things. I do think there is a real sort of, you know, there's not going to be a long feeling out process between Rand Carthen and Mike Vrabel in terms of, oh, you like this? Well, have you thought about a guy like this instead or whatnot? You do feel like they're gonna see the game and they're gonna see players the same way, largely. But yeah, I think we've talked about that before here. I mean, the offensive line has to be job number one for this entire personnel and coaching staff this offseason. Whatever you have to do, wherever you have to go to find offensive linemen, whether it's in free agency, whether it's via a trade, whether it's the draft, whether it's all of the above, that has to be better. And it's going to start, let's be honest, when you talk about a team that's $24 million over the cap, and you can lop off 2/3 of that plus by simply cutting Taylor Lewan, that's going to be move number one, is it not, John? I mean, it has to be, right?
No doubt. Yeah, and there's no dead money involved either, so it's pretty much a lock. And Taylor Lewan has said as much. He knows it's coming, and he is accurate. He's a smart man.
So that'll do it. I think that kind of covers it for this week. We will be back a week from now with another episode and look ahead to the Super Bowl. Maybe look back at the Senior Bowl. Maybe there will be some coaches, a coordinator hired by then. There's still much to come this off season in what figures to be continues to be, I guess, a dramatic off season for this team. But until then, Denard Walker, you have a good week, my friend.
You too, David. Have a good one.
Thank you, John Glennon. You have a good week.
You as well.
And once again, I am David Beauclair. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Thank you for downloading. Thank you for sharing. This is the Believe in Titans podcast, brought to you by Bet Online.